The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Kennedy Hewitt back inside the Beltway. Thank you, Kurt Schlichter, for sitting in for me last week when I was in California greeting Secretary of State Michael Pompeo at the Nixon Library, where he joined me on Thursday. I was out there all week getting ready for the visit. Historically significant speech. I did want to play for you, though, to begin the show, the Q&A I had with Secretary Pompeo after the speech in which he declared an end to engagement, hope-driven and results-barren engagement with the People's Republic of China's Chinese Communist Party. As soon as the speech was done, I stood up, went onto the stage, sat down, and began this conversation with Mike Pompeo.
I'm Hugh Hewitt, the president of the library, and Secretary Pompeo graciously invited some questions as I was listening. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Secretary, at the Nixon Library. My first question has to do with the context of the president's visit in 1972. You mentioned the Soviet Union was isolated, but it was dangerous. He went to the People's Republic of China in 1972 to try and ally and combine interests with them against the Soviet Union. It was successful. Does Russia present an opportunity now to the United States to coax them into the battle, to be relentlessly candid about the Chinese Communist Party?
So I do think there's that opportunity. That opportunity is born of the relationship, the natural relationship between Russia and China. And we can do something as well. There are places where we need to work with Russia. Today or tomorrow, I guess it is, our teams will be on the ground with the Russians working on a strategic dialogue to hopefully create the next generation of arms control agreements like Reagan did. It's in our interest. It's in Russia's interest. We've asked the Chinese to participate. They've declined to date. We hope they'll change their mind. It's these kind of things, these proliferation issues, these big strategic challenges that if we work alongside Russia, I'm convinced we can make the world safer. And so I think there is a place for us to work with the Russians to achieve a more likely outcome of peace, not only for the United States, but for the world.
President Nixon also put quite a lot of story in personal relationships over many years with individuals that can lead wrong. President Bush famously misjudged Vladimir Putin and said so afterwards. You have met President Xi often. Is the general secretary of the Chinese Communist Party someone with whom we can deal on a transparent and reliable basis, in your opinion, based on your personal diplomacy with him?
So the meetings that I've had and the meeting that the president we've had, they've been good, frank conversations. He is the most powerful leader of China since Mao. He has also, in many ways, deinstitutionalized the Chinese Communist Party, thus giving him even more capacity and more power. But you know, I think the way to think about it is how I spoke about this today. It's about actions. And so how one evaluates one's counterpart sitting across the table from them is important to think about how you can find common understandings and make progress. But in the end, it's not about what someone says or the agreement that they sign, but are they prepared to lead, to do the things that they committed to? Are they prepared to fulfill their promises? And we've watched this China walk away for their promises to the world on Hong Kong. We walked there. General Secretary Xi promised President Obama in the Rose Garden in 2015 that he wouldn't militarize the South China Sea. Google the South China Sea and arms. You'll see another promise broken. So in the end, from my perspective, it's much more important to watch how leaders behave and how they lead than what it is you think when you have a chance to talk to them on the phone or meet them in person.
Mr. Secretary, you said this is not containment. I heard that very clearly. I have read the three previous speeches by Ambassador O'Brien, Director Ray, Attorney General Barr, and now listen to you very closely. It isn't containment, but it is a fairly comprehensive, multidimensional relentlessly objective candor. Is that dangerous in a world that's not used to speaking clearly about delicate subjects?
You know, my experience, and I think President Trump's experience, too, in his life as a businessman, is the best policy is always true candor. Identifying the places that you have a red line, identifying places that you have a real interest, making clear if there's places where you don't and there's things that you can work on alongside each other. I think the real danger comes from misunderstandings and miscommunication and the failure to be honest about the things that matter to you, because others will move into that space and then conflict arises. I think the world is a heck of a lot safer when you have leaders who are prepared to be honest about the things that matter and prepared to talk about the things their nation is prepared to do to secure those interests. And you can reduce risk by these conversations so long as you're honest about it. So I don't think it's dangerous. I think it's just the opposite of that.
You also said, and I'm sure the speech will be known as the distrust but verify speech. When you distrust but verify, that still premises verification is possible. It is still possible to do agreements and to verify them, correct?
It is. Yeah, you can still do it. Each nation's got to be prepared for a certain amount of intrusiveness connected to that. And it is not in the nature of communist regimes to allow transparency inside of their country. And so it's been done before. We had arms controls agreements with the Soviet Union that we got verification that was sufficient to ensure that we protected American interests. I believe we can do it again. I hope that we can do this on these. The Chinese Communist Party has several hundred nuclear warheads. This is a serious global power. And to the extent we can find common ground, a common set of understandings to reduce risk that there's ever a really bad day for the world, we ought to do it. And it's going to require agreement and verification.
Ambassador Richard Haass, who is now chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations, said very recently, it may have been yesterday, it might have been this morning, I saw it this morning preparing, quote, Secretary Pompeo doesn't speak of China, but of the Chinese Communist Party, if there is a China, as if there were a China apart from the party. This is meant to antagonize and make diplomacy impossible. Quite a stance for America's chief diplomat to take unless his goal is to ensure diplomacy fails. Is that your goal?
Goodness. I where to begin? Here's where I'll begin. It's a bit patronizing to the people of China to make such an assertion that they are not free thinking beings, that they're not rational people who were given. They too were made in the image of God, right? They have all the capacity that anybody in the world does. So to somehow think that we ought to ignore the voices of the people of China seems to me the wrong approach. It is true. The Chinese Communist Party is a one-party rule. And so we will deal with the Chinese Communist Party as the head of state for China. And we need to engage in dialogue. But it seems to me we would dishonor ourselves and the people of China if we ignored them.
Now, Ambassador O'Brien, whose speech you referenced, put heavy emphasis on the ideology of Marxist-Leninism. It was almost quaint to hear that conversation again. It's gone from our vocabulary. Does the American people and especially American media need to reacquaint itself with what Marxist-Leninists believe, because the CCP genuinely does believe it?
You know, I always get in trouble, Hugh, when I comment on the media. So I'll say this much. For those of us who have lived and seen and observed, there are other Marxist-Leninist nations today as well, and have seen, they believe, they have an understanding, a central understanding of how people interact and how societies ought to interact. And it is certainly the case today that the leadership in China believes that we should acknowledge that, and we should make sure that we don't for a moment think that they don't believe it. That's what Ambassador O'Brien's speech was about. It was the fact it was acknowledging that they believe it and recognizing that we have to respond in a way that reflects our understanding of the way they view the world.
Let's not talk about the American media. I want to talk about the Chinese media for a moment. They are aggressive, to say the least. And right now they are aggressively defending, for example, TikTok. A small question within a large question. Is TikTok capable of being weaponized? Is that an example of what's going on? And generally, Chinese media has become far more aggressive than I've seen in 30 years since I was at the library the first time of watching it. Is that something you've noticed as well?
Yes, they're very aggressive. Two pieces to this. One you hit upon. One is I'll describe as their technology medium. without singling out any particular business, our view of these companies is we're neither for or against the company. We're about making sure that we protect the information that belongs to each of you, your health records, your face, if it's a facial recognition software, your address, all the things that you care that you want to make sure the Chinese Communist Party doesn't have. We have a responsibility to make sure that the systems that you're using don't give them access to that. And so whether it's the efforts we made against Huawei or the work that we're doing on other software firms, the American task is to protect the American people and their information. Second piece of this has to do with their what I'll call the state-sponsored media of China and their disinformation. You should know, and this is where I am concerned about the American media too. These are state-sponsored media organizations that take their messaging from the Chinese Communist Party each day. When American institutions pick up those storylines and carry them forward, they are in fact propagating Chinese propaganda, and we all ought to be wise to that. There was an editorial in the New York Times yesterday by someone who had a clear view that was antithetical to the American way of life. The New York Times ran it straight up without comment, forwarding, although albeit in the opinion section, propagating Chinese propaganda. That is certainly not instructive when they're telling senators from Arkansas they can't simply talk about American freedom in that same.
More coming up. The Trump campaign is a special offer just for you. President Trump really wants to give you a signed 2020 Make America Great hat. He wants to make sure the lucky winner is one of his top supporters. Be sure to enter soon because this is an opportunity you don't want to miss. This offer is only going to go to a select group of supporters, and you're one of them. All you have to do is text Hewitt to 88022 today for your chance to win a signed 2020 Make America Great hat and own a piece of history. Again, that's Hewitt to 88022 to enter to win this contest and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for four more years. This was paid for by Donald J. Trump for President, Inc.
And the graveyards of the rusted automobile. Good morning, America. How are you?
Good morning, America. Hugh Hewitt back. Thanks to Kurt Schlichter for filling in for me all last week. Colonel Kurt did a great job. He may have mentioned his brand new book, 21 Biggest Lies They Tell About Trump and You. He may have mentioned that a few times, but we were glad to have him here. Today, let me begin with the business story today. I'm going to finish my Q&A with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo after the break. But I wanted to bring you the business story of the day because it goes right to one of my sponsors, Birch Gold. Now, Birch Gold has been with me for since last year. And I've been telling you, you've got to diversify. You've got to have precious metals. You've got to either buy physical gold and silver in the amount that will actually matter and put it in your safety deposit box, or roll over a portion of your IRA or 401k into backed precious metals. Well, this morning, and you can do that at HughGold.com. You can text my name, Hugh, to 474747. All right, that's text Hugh, H-U-G-H, to 474747. Start the conversation today, and Birch Gold will help you. Well, the big story of the day is from the Financial Times. Gold hits a record and dollar falls as economic outlook darkens. Gold soared to an all-time high and the dollar weakened to a multi-year low as sharp increase in U.S. coronavirus cases and flare-ups around the world weighed on investor confidence. The price of the precious metal, which investors typically view as a haven in times of uncertainty, climbed as much as 2.2% to a record $1,944.71 per troy ounce on Monday. That's where it is this morning. It's now down to 1,936. When I went on vacation, it was at 1,700. And when I first started telling you about Birch Gold, it was in the 1,400s. And the reason I'm doing it this morning is just to let you know, there was a bad day on the market Friday. The Dow was down 182 on Friday. The Nasdaq was off 98 and the S&P was off 20. But the fact remains that there's amazing amount of stimulus, and the Republicans are getting close to a stimulus plan, according to the Wall Street Journal this morning. They're teeing up a GOP after delay, tees up virus bill, and jumbo mortgages are no longer the cheapest mortgages around. There's a lot of economic news today, and the Fed is meeting tomorrow on Wednesday. But the fact remains that all of this stimulus they wonder, why is the stock market going up, 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 up? Even though it had a couple of down days last week, why is gold going up, up, up? It's because the central banks of the world, all of them, all of them, in response to the coronavirus, have pumped a lot of fake money. It's not fake money, it spends, but there's a lot more of it. So where there was, you know, if you have $100 to spend on groceries and all of a sudden you have $1,000 to spend on groceries, the price of the groceries go up, right? That's called inflation. That's what's going to happen. And the world is betting on inflation. And that's why gold, which does not change, it just reflects the money supply and generally economic conditions when they are panicky, favor gold. Gold keeps going up. So please keep in mind birchgold.com. Birchgold.com. Now, the overseas this morning, Germany is up 0.5% and England is down 0.15%. The 10-year Treasury is unbelievably below 0.6%. It's at 0.59%. So I let me check what Amazon did on. I've been gone for a week, so Amazon ended the week at $3,008. They report on Thursday. A lot of analysts came out last week and said $3,800 for that stock is the price target. We'll find out because, of course, everyone staying inside means that Amazon, Costco, Target, everybody is making hay. Now, I've been working on a piece that will be out in the Washington Post later this week on coverage of the virus, and I'm looking at the front page of the Post this morning. America's global standing is at a low. The pandemic made it worse. That's just not true. That's just not true. That is a story designed to hurt Trump. And I got to tell you, in the next 99 days, because we're 99 days from the election, elite media is going to go all in to defeat Donald Trump. And the poll show he's behind now, I think the real poll show between 8 and 10 points, easily closable, and it really starts on Labor Day and with the debates. But just be prepared. They're all in to defeat Donald Trump. And they're letting Joe Biden hide and just stay away from cameras for reasons that you can guess. But just be prepared and just shrug it off because the American people are not fooled. They are not fooled. More of Secretary Pompeo and then some very interesting statistics you probably haven't heard on COVID when I return to the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Have you read my blog today? 300 million little USAs. Your doorstep is just a click away. We'll get together one of these days. How can you be?
Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt back inside the Beltway. It was a blistering 100 degrees yesterday. Got my 8 miles in early in the day. I'll tell you about that at the end of the segment. Also want to remind you, Brad Thor's brand new book, Near Dark, is out there. I interviewed him last week. We played two segments. I'm going to replay one of those segments later this week so that you can make sure you know why you ought to go out and get Brad Thor's number one bestseller, Near Dark. Job Creator Network Foundation still continues to run flattenthefear.com. I want you to go to flattenthefear.com. Make sure that you see all of the statistics. Indeed, the American Academy of Pediatrics, which represents 67,000 pediatricians across the country, urging a policy that, quote, should start with a goal of having students physically present in the school. If there's one consensus, I think, in America, it's that K through 6 ought to be back in school and being taught by teachers under the age of 50. Districts make it happen. Flattenthefear.com. Flattenthefear.com. I want to go back. Play for you the final couple of questions I had for Secretary of State Pompeo on Thursday. Then we're going to go to Barstool Sports and what was an amazing interview by David Portnoy of the president last week. But here I am with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo on Thursday at the Nixon Library, Part 2.
Media outlet.
You mentioned that a lot of corporate America, and you mentioned specifically Hollywood, have got deep intertwinement with the Chinese economy. So I don't want to talk about soft power. I want to talk about soft appeasement. One of my favorite sports figures, LeBron James, falls silent when China comes up. In the new Top Gun movie, the Taiwan and Japanese patches are taken off Maverick's jacket. They're not going to be in Top Gun 2. They were in Top Gun 1. What do you say, not to those individuals, but to everyone who has an American spotlight about their responsibility to be candid about the People's Republic of China?
Here's our ask. Our ask is, if you claim that you care about human rights or social justice or these things, if you make that part of your corporate theology, then you ought to be consistent. And you can't be consistent if you're operating there in China without talking about and acknowledging what the Chinese Communist Party is doing in certain parts of their country, the oppression that's taking place. Look, every business leader has got to make decisions for themselves. They've got to be able to live with the decisions that they make. You highlighted a few. I'd simply ask this. If you run an entity and the United States government were to tell you you couldn't do something, put a particular symbol in your movie or put a particular name on your menu, if we were to tell you that, you'd say, nope, that's not appropriate. And it, of course, would not be appropriate. It seems to me that if you permit the Chinese Communist Party to limit you in that way, it's got to be difficult for you to go home at night.
Two more questions, Mr. Secretary. Because it is hot and it is warm, and everyone out here has been in the sun for a while. You're a West Point graduate, and as Governor Wilson noted, number one, so this might be tough for you, but we are in, like Athens was, a naval power. America is a naval power, and as like Sparta is, China is a land power. Do we not have to change how we approach defense spending to put more emphasis on our naval resources than on our Army resources?
Oh, that's tough for an Army guy to say.
I know.
You're killing me. Look, I'll leave to Secretary Esper the details of this, but I can. Here's what I can say. When President Trump set out our national security strategy early on in the administration, for the first time, we identified China in a way that was fundamentally different than we had done. This isn't partisan, for decades. That was important because that was a signal to all of us, whether it's the State Department or the Defense Department, that we need to reorient our assets. And so, yes, you've seen the Department of Defense to begin to do that. These are big things to turn. These budgets are multi-year. It takes a while. But if you look at how Secretary Esper and President Trump are positioning our military capabilities, not just the tactical, operational, strategic capabilities, but our cyber capabilities, our space capabilities. If you look at how we're thinking about this and spending resources in year 2, 3, 4, and 5, I think you'll see that our focus has shifted pretty dramatically. It's not to say that our efforts to protect America from terrorism are behind us. We still have work to do there. But I think this great power challenge that presents itself is something that we have recognized, and we begin to make sure that we allocate your money, our taxpayer resources that we have, to the appropriate ends to achieve American security.
My last question has to do with a former Secretary of State who was also an Army man, George Marshall. He gave a speech in 1947 at your alma mater, Harvard, in which he called on all the nations of the world to recognize that the world was in crisis and to choose a side. And he assured them in that famous address that if you chose the American side in asserting Europe, you could count on America. So as you make the appeal you did today, not just to Europe, where it's relatively easy to be outspoken, though Norway has found it not to be outspoken, but to Taiwan and Japan and Vietnam and all of the Australia, all of the nations of that region, can they rely on America in the way that people opposing the Soviet Union could rely on George Marshall's assurance in 1947?
Undoubtedly. Undoubtedly, Hugh. The only thing I'll say is this language of pick a side does make sense to me, but I think about picking a side differently than picking America or picking China. I think the sides, the division, the shirts and skins, if you will, is between freedom and tyranny. I think that's the decision that we're asking each of these nations to make. And here's the good news of this. The good news is it does take American leadership often in these cases. To your point, they need to know that America will be there for them. I've seen the tide turn. In just these 3.5 years of our administration, I've watched other nations have less timidity, become more prepared to stand up for their freedoms and for the freedoms of their people. We don't ask them to do this for America. We ask them to do it for their country and for their nation, the freedom and the independence and to protect the rights of their people. And when we do that and we tell them that America will be there, I'm very confident in the end that this is a world that with the hard work applied will become one that is governed by a rules-based order and the freedom of the American people will be secured.
Mr. Secretary, thank you for joining us here today.
Please join
me in thanking the Secretary. That was a historic speech, and I was honored to escort him onto the stage, honored to ask him questions afterwards. But the key is distrust and verify, and that speech resonating around the world. At the same time that the Secretary was talking to me and Yorba Linda, President Trump sat down in the Oval Office with Dave Portnoy, who you may not know. He's the president of Barstool Sports. Now, Barstool Sports is a young person's website. By and large, I still go to it, but I mean, it's mostly for young
young men, overwhelmingly, and some young women. And they just do sports in a raucous way. But Portnoy was in there in the way that President Obama used to do ESPN brackets. President Trump is reaching out to new media. He started this way, cut number one in the Oval Office tour with David Portnoy of Barstool Sports.
Come on, let's go out and do this real fast. We like it. This is the Liberty Steps. Liberty Steps sketch. Many presidents have sat behind this desk. Good stuff, right?
Oh,
we're just saying, nothing like the White House. You know, the whole, it's the whole deal, right? How are you?
Good to meet you.
Walks out onto the end of the porch. So there's nothing like the White House, right? And then David Portnoy sits down with the president, and it's all of this is online. You ought to watch the whole thing. It's an absolutely wonderful interview because, well, you'll hear why. Cut number two.
Your son's a big fan of our website.
He's a big fan of you, yeah.
I've tried to get, even before this started, I was trying to get a retweet out of him for about 6 months.
Well, we'll do that.
He kept, well, you got me on one, but he'd DM me. I'd be like, get the old man to get a retweet, get the numbers up.
Oh,
we'll talk business.
Well, you're doing pretty well on that.
Yeah, process, yeah. So, well, so are you.
Yeah, we did.
So I consider myself, believe it or not, apolitical. I don't consider myself wildly Republican, Democrat, yeah. Kind of down in the middle. In fact, this is my first interview I've ever done. So
you
I started at the top.
You started very well. That's good.
And I was going to give you the heads up. I don't know if you're going to remember this. You once were on Ali G's show, and you were the only one that sniffed out that it was a fake interview and the whole thing. I don't know if you remember that.
That's right.
I thought maybe you'd be like, oh, this guy's a fake. Anyway,
were you involved with that show in some
no,
way?
No, not at all. I just watched it on TV.
But you're right. I was the only one.
30 seconds
guys,
in and out.
I said, hey, this guy's a total fraud, and I left.
And everyone else sits there for 6 hours. I know.
You're the only one that's ever given me credit for that.
That was a very sharp move because he's pretty good at that. He gets everybody.
Now, I like this interview. No matter what he does, I like this interview now, Mariana. That's right. I said, what's going on with this guy? And I just felt it was a phony deal.
Yeah. And nobody else did it. Nobody else smelled it up.
And he said he was from British Broadcasting Corporation. They called up with everything beautiful, The Voice. This is British Broadcast. And then this guy shows up. I said, this is a... But within a very short, like immediately. And thank you very much. You gave me credit.
On it.
Because I never get credit for anything.
I'm pretty good. That's what I'm saying.
You're pretty good.
And here's part of it, which... And I hate politics. My dad loves politics. The thing that drives me nuts... I feel like it, for us, which is good,
right.
They're like, hey, Dave, you're a snowflake. Hey, Dave, you're a conservative, like, crazy person. And almost on each side, you can predict what somebody's going to say, which drives me nuts.
Yeah.
It's like you put it in a box. So one of the things that I've been thinking about, and for all the people like me, which is I think a good amount of the country is still like, which way am I going to vote?
Right.
One of the things that I have a question for, and... Again, I think it matters. I'm very curious on the answer. So when the Kaepernick thing started, I was critical of it. And as it's continued, baseball players now, I heard you say, if they kneel, you'll turn the game off.
Yeah.
And we got the Black Lives Matter protests. So for me, it's like, how does somebody who's dissatisfied, in your world, what's the way for them to show it? Because we don't want them looting and doing all the stuff they're doing. To me, that's like a silent protest that is far better than, you know, going on the streets and create crime. So I'm curious, what would you do if you had an issue with the country or something to show your displeasure?
Well, I mean, you can always say you run for office, right? You become successful. You can run for a lower office. You can do things. But there are ways. You get groups together. And they can be very friendly ways of doing it, very successful. I mean, you're going to have rebounds, negative rebounds, if it keeps up the way it is. Like, as an example, Portland, this is crazy. 51 days, you know, we sent in very powerful, not military, but very strong people. The police are good, but they were told not to do anything, you know, by the radical left mayor. No, you have to go out and you have to say, and speak your mind is good. I think speaking your mind is good, but you have to do it fairly. We are for justice, but we're for law and order. It's got to be law and order. And there is law and order. I put something out when they were starting to rip down statues. I went out. I found an old law, an old bill. You couldn't get it passed today. You get 10 years in jail, 10 years and no games. And we have a lot of people in jail right now. If you rip down a statue, a federal statue, because the states have to take care of their own, unfortunately, because I
right.
do that, too. But you rip down a federal statue, you get 10 years in jail. 10 years. No, you know, 3 months. And nothing's happened since then. It was amazing. I signed it. I had a news conference. I said, if you do it, and we were supposed to have thousands of people march on Washington that day. Nobody showed up.
How do we... close the divide. Like, at my age, it's like, it just seems to kind of...
Pause it right there. We will come back to this, because it's a fascinating interview. If you haven't seen David Portnoy with the president on Barstool Sports, just Google Barstool Sports Trump Portnoy, P-O-R-T-N-O-Y. I'll play more of it after I talk with Selena Zito. Come right back. Selena Zito is next. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt, joined now by Selena Zito. She is here with the Yinzer Report from Pittsburgh. Selena, the Pirates have gotten off to a 1-2 start. The Indians are 2-1. They crushed, absolutely destroyed the Royals yesterday. Sorry about your Pirates. I'm not sure this is the Bucks' year.
It hasn't been the Bucks' year since 1992, and Sid Bree was out.
So they're
just, I'm not poor, bitter or anything.
No, poor Carl. He's listening. He said he's given up. Selena, this is important. We're 99 days from the election. Pennsylvania is the key. Gravis poll came out on Saturday of 1,006 likely voters, taken over July 22nd through the 24th, shows Joe Biden +3. How's that feel to you?
I think this could be +3 in either way. That would be a probably right. I think it could go in either direction. But this will shock you. People are still not paying attention in the same way that we, you know, people that do politics for a living. I went through 9 counties this past 3 days. And while I found robust support for the president, to be honest, people are more concerned about their communities. Very similar to 2016, but with different issues. Concerned about their families, concerned about generations after them within their families, concerned about the health and well-being of their communities, and obviously how the virus ties into all of that.
Now, how much are people talking about the virus versus the violence? Because right now there are two stories, virus and violence. And I mean, we had shootings in Austin and Aurora, Colorado over the weekend, Austin, Texas, Aurora, Colorado, Seattle violence, Portland violence, Chicago violence. How much are people talking about violence? How much are they talking about the virus in your 9-county swing?
A lot. In fact, I would say if you had to compare the two, I would say that people were talking about violence more because they're deeply concerned about what this is doing to American cities and what, you know, what this means. This is kind of part of what the election will hinge on, at least today, because Lord knows in January I was going to say impeachment. And in February, I was going to say the economy. But as today, how are local elected officials or how local elected officials in these cities that have been scarred deeply by this violence react to these riots will play a part in their decision, in particular in how the higher federal level of elections, you know, what does their congressman or woman think of this? What is the person that they're thinking about for president? How do they view this? And so that is deeply on the mind of a lot of people.
So I want to talk about your 9-county swing in the context. I've got an email this morning from some friends who were celebrating their 35th anniversary in Maine. And they wrote back a couple of observations. The travel was by car. All the facilities were requiring face coverings, hand washing, social distancing. Hotels were doing the same. Service was great. Business is down. Canadian border is closed. Some state toll facilities were done toll by post. Others took cash wearing gloves. In Kennebunkport, Maine, a veteran was waving U.S. flag, asking folks to honk for those who protect us. U.S. flags were quite prominent everywhere, as well as buntings on the way home. We saw in North Carolina a state trooper changing the tire of a person. It was 93 degrees, remarkable. And so generally upbeat in a Maine to North Carolina drive. What did you find in Pennsylvania?
Also upbeat. You know, the 15 minutes out of any city in America, and all of a sudden everybody has a flag hanging off of their front porch or a flag pole in their front yard. And, you know, see people going about their business. You know, as in 2016, I saw a ton of Trump signs just everywhere, homemade. That's a different intensity level. I did see something interesting in Venango County. I ran across this three houses with Biden signs in it in a row, with a Trump sign in between the three of them. So of course I stopped to talk to them, and they were all pretty good natured and laughing about it. And the Biden people, I said, "So have you changed your vote?" And they're like, "No, we didn't change our vote. We've always been Democrats. We just couldn't get the Hillary Clinton people to ever give us a sign." So I thought that that was interesting. But those were also the only three Biden signs I saw in nine counties.
Well, you know, it's Pennsylvania. As Pennsylvania goes, I think this election will go. So we'll continue to check in with you weekly. SelenaZito.com to read everything Selena writes for The Wall Street Journal, The Washington Examiner, The New York Post. It is all collected at SelenaZito.com. Don't go anywhere, America. I'm coming back next hour with Arthur Herman, Senior Fellow of the Hudson Institute, David Cortman of ADF, disappointing decision from the Supreme Court while I was away. Third hour, Governor Larry Hogan of Maryland, Louisiana Senator John Kennedy are joining me. We got lots ahead today and more of the David Portnoy interview with the president in the Oval Office because it was just so amazing. We'll keep an eye on markets as well, bring you up to speed on all the news that is happening, the news that you need. Virus numbers are up everywhere, but not deaths. And I'll tell you why I believe that is the case when we come back. I think America's figured it out when it comes to treating coronavirus. There's still tragic deaths, but I think we have a handle on treatment. Hour number two of the Monday edition of the Hugh Hewitt Show, straight ahead.